Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
We're all the way in and got sent all the way back to the student section. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Golic Jr., Janae Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests are going to join us on the Goodyear Hotline. We'll have plenty to break down. Jordan Cornette's going to join us from the ACC Network. Our friend and basketball analyst, Marcus Spears from NFL Live, our ESPN NFL analyst, going to help us break down the ripple effects of what's gone on with Sam Darnold, the trade heard around the world yesterday, and what to do now, its effect on the upcoming NFL draft. But good Lord Almighty, Janae, we were all in here drinking that Gonzaga Kool-Aid after their unbelievable Final Four win, and Baylor came out here yoked and just straight up bullied them to a national championship win. They win 86-70, running away and hiding with it.
Congratulations, Michael Jr., for the tweet of the tournament, the tweet of the night, summing up the matchup. Do you remember what you tweeted?
I did. I tweeted Gonzaga saying, quote, "We have a really great offense," and Baylor's response, "We work out with the football team," because Lord almighty, it looked like that. Gonzaga trying to figure out what a football team is. Baylor looking like they might be trying out for it tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think, you know, even though I picked Gonzaga, you picked Gonzaga, that is the essence of the tournament. The biggest thing that gave me anxiety when it came to the big reveal of what the brackets were was like, who's the matchups? Like, on what side, which number one seed will we have? Knowing that you're eventually going to have to beat the best. But the reality is, based on the pathway, I mean, Baylor did exactly what they needed to do, but Baylor was the worst matchup that Gonzaga could have had at any point in the tournament. Even Mark Few, Gonzaga's coach, acknowledged this. He said a couple months ago, like, hey, out of anyone in the field, I'm looking at that team, how they are built different, and I know that they can pose a very unique threat to us maintaining an undefeated season. And we saw exactly why he was apprehensive.
Yes, lots of reasons to be concerned. So we'll get to that coming up in a little bit with Jordan. And before that, figuring out how much we attribute to what happened in the semifinal round and how we're supposed to judge this Gonzaga season that was on the verge of being an all-timer, now that is all for naught on that championship stage. But Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We were coming on air yesterday on this show right as Adam Schefter announced the news that Sam Darnold was being traded from the New York Jets for 3 picks to the Carolina Panthers. And Janae, since then, there's been a lot of reaction to this, but I think most of it now is centered maybe even less on what Sam Darnold can be in Carolina and more on, all right, we're inside a month from the NFL draft. All of the ways that this could have potentially affect the top of the draft now for these teams, because you look at it, you've got Atlanta sitting in that 4 spot, the Bengals and Miami at 5 and 6, the Lions at 7, and then the Panthers still sitting there at 8th. And we had a lot of talk about the Panthers, what they could potentially do with that 8th overall pick. Damian Woody, our ESPN NFL analyst, joined us on the show yesterday and said, don't count out quarterback at that 8th pick for Carolina.
I don't think the Carolina Panthers gave up a whole bunch. Now, I saw online that the Carolina Panthers are going to exercise Sam Darnold's 50-year option, but when you got a young quarterback that potentially drops to you, I don't think that precludes the Carolina Panthers from not taking him. So I think all things are still on the table.
Janae, when you hear that and see what Carolina gave up yesterday for this pick, where we know we talked about Sam Darnold is age-wise, do you think it's realistic that they might bring another young quarterback into that room still with that 8th overall pick?
I think it depends on how the draft goes. And at this point, we're starting to see at least the top. And I think as we get closer and closer, we can get a little bit more of a picture of what these franchises, sort of the direction they're heading. But at this point, you know, Carolina, it's really interesting because we all know that their backs were sort of against the wall trying to find a quarterback. They were shooting their shot, I believe, at Matthew Stafford. Then they were shooting their shot at Deshaun Watson. And now I think based on who was last remaining, being Sam Darnold, knowing that potentially that 8th pick would not guarantee them a quarterback, this was probably their plan B that became their plan A, not knowing that, oh snap, we still have a plan B too. So it's like plan A and plan A sort of looking at each other in the eye. And now I think you have to have a question about, like, what direction do we want to go and what message do we want to send Sam? Now I think Sam, no matter what, is a professional, and that's so much, you know, to be in the middle of the New York Jets franchise and organization and have to deal with the struggle and have to deal with trying to make lemonade out of lemons, it's not an easy position. And for him to walk out of that with a lot of the public rooting for him, you know, I think that says a lot to his character. And so if you are going to make a difficult decision, maybe finding a quarterback available with that eighth spot, at least you've got the guy that maybe would be a little bit more amenable, and it won't be something where you can't build that locker room moving forward. But what do you think? Because we had Mina Kimes join us yesterday, and she said there's no way in the realm of possibility that they probably get a quarterback. And I think it was largely based on the back end of the deal, the options that he has, you know, the money, because you always, you know, follow where the money resides. But it's crazy because it has sparked a debate on what the Carolina Panthers should do.
Yeah, I look at this, Chiné, as it's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless, and say I probably lean towards Mina in that I don't think they would go for a quarterback here, because if you're sitting around at eight, we have seen plenty of mock drafts that talk about one of these top five quarterbacks potentially falling. It's been Justin Fields for a lot of this draft cycle so far leading up to it. But what else did we hear from Adam Schefter earlier today? With teams locked into place for the first three overall picks, the Atlanta Falcons have now received trade calls from multiple teams and are, quote, open to moving out of that four spot per source. The only way they're moving out of that is if a team is eager to come up and get another one of those quarterbacks. And so for Carolina, just think about the risk and the variables that they're looking at in this situation if they're still thinking about drafting a quarterback this year. You got to be comfortable with what could be a couple of different combinations of quarterback that fall down to you at eight. Would be the fifth quarterback likely taken in this draft. And then you would take them on top of Sam Darnold, who was already supposed to be the upside play. Chiné, if you'd kept Teddy Bridgewater in this room, this would be the obvious play, and I'd expect them to even think about moving up. But I think them taking Sam Darnold, who's already a risk, it's not like you've got some sort of high-floor Teddy Bridgewater quarterback holding it down right now. You took a risk. You took a project on there, and that indicates to me that they're going to take this two-year gamble, try and use this eighth pick and the rest of the picks to build up the rest of what's been a depleted roster the last couple of years, and then I think work with what the quarterback situation is on the other side.
I love this because since the top 10 picks of the draft, you know, top five are largely quarterbacks. If you need a weapon and you are in prime position to grab a weapon, it feels like it's staring you right in the face. Get the weapon. And Junior, what you sort of highlighted, you know, I am down the vortex of all these mock drafts. You heard me before the show. I've never been this person, but I'm like, yo, Junior, did you see Tana Mom's latest mock draft?
It brought me so much joy, Chiné, by the way, you being the one to bring that up on this show. You're going through, breaking it down in like the teens. It's incredible.
And we just showed it on ESPN Plus. So I guess I'll ask you this. It looks like a lot of confidence with San Francisco in the third pick going to Mac Jones at this point. And now the question would remain being Trey Lance or Justin Fields potentially with that eighth spot. Are you thinking that, per your opinion, Sam Darnold is better than both of those guys, not knowing what their upside is?
No, I think Sam Darnold would definitely be behind both of those two players, and that's the difficult part of this. You see, if you're watching on ESPN Plus, Mike Tannenbaum's mock has Trey Lance going fourth overall to the Falcons, who Adam talked about being ready and willing to dispose of that pick, and Justin Fields going eighth to the Panthers, acknowledging the Sam Darnold factor in there. And I can understand the thought process is always, Chiné, if we get our guy, if we in the top 10 of the draft can get a quarterback we're in love with, there is no price too big. There is no Sam Darnold and that fifth-year option potential that you have to go through and make. And to be clear, they don't have to make a decision about that fifth-year option, I believe, until after the draft. I want to say that date is May 3rd, which would be the Monday after the draft. So they're not beholden to anything yet. And if he falls there and you're in love with him, and it is Justin Fields, who seems weirdly to be the faller in this draft, despite how good he's been in Ohio State, that could be a very hard thing to say no to, and a show of just how aggressive this team, this coach, and hell, go all the way up to David Tepper, their owner, are willing to be to go out and try and build a winner here.
Quick answer, who would you take at eight, Junior?
If I was at eight, I mean, I would take... Let's put it this way. I wouldn't think Justin Fields would still be there because I'd be taking him in the top four. I'd be taking him at two if I were the Jets in that spot. But we've seen the way the tea leaves have gone on this, and so it seems like someone's going to be down in that range. if they don't already jump up and switch with Atlanta in that spot. It's all going to be fascinating, and I think all of these dominoes start to fall even more because of what we saw with that Sam Darnold trade. Now New York's made their intentions clear. Now Atlanta clearly was not willing to play trade partner with their in-division rival, and so now we get to see how much changes hands. We'll get into that later on. Plenty of tentacles off of this, including the one team that absolutely, without question, needs to pick up the phone and call Atlanta, not only for their sake, but for the sake of the rest of the NFL. I'll give you exactly why with that. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. But first, got to remind you guys to come hang out with us, Chiné and Golic Jr., having a virtual Q&A leading up to the NFL draft. Join us Tuesday, April 13th at 8 o'clock Eastern. We're going to hop in Zoom and answer your questions. Registration's free, but space is limited. So register now at bit.ly/CGJ421. Those are all lowercase. That's bit.ly/CGJ421. All lowercase. And when you register, be sure to submit your questions about the draft, about the Bachelor, basketball, food, dating apps, whatever you want. We got you. Anything. All that, and for a chance, we'll even give you a shout-out and answer that question live during the event. So make sure you check that out. We're really excited about that. There haven't been a lot of chances to interact with people this year, and so we're looking at looking at you on Zoom, hanging out together. Mm-hmm. So check that out. But coming up next, Gonzaga got whooped by Baylor last night. Does it erase all the good that happened from this season for Baylor and this program? We'll get to that next. Chiné and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio.
Chiné and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Cornett, our ESPN college basketball analyst, will join us in about 10 minutes here, break down everything we saw in the tournament. But Chiné, we just spent a lot of time talking about this Carolina Panthers pick at 8, what to do now that Sam Darnold's there. And I feel like you just called me out hard during the last break. Chiné and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio.
I did.
Mike Golic Jr. and Chiné Agwumike, because Rick Olhaber tweets in, and you can tweet us at Chiné and at Mike Golic Jr., saying the Panthers should stick with Darnold and take Pitts if available. Lance and Fields likely bust. Now, I disagree hard with that last one, but math says that one or two of them will probably be a bust, maybe even more. But Chiné, at the start of that segment, I said I thought Sam Darnold was the high upside risk pick that would prevent them from taking a quarterback at 8. And by the end, you showed me Justin Fields going to 8 in Mike Tannenbaum's draft. And I'm like, man, if Fields is there, can you really say no? So you have seen the Stugatz is very strong in me at times.
Very strong, which is why I asked you the follow-up and said, so who are you taking at 8? And you didn't answer, by the way. I hope you realize that.
Oh, yeah. No, because I'm still figuring it out, because it's really difficult. At Chiné and at Mike Golic Jr., if Justin Fields is available at 8, do the Panthers have to take him in that spot? Because, Chiné, there's a strong part of me that says you'd be missing out on a big-time opportunity at quarterback. Yeah. You don't know how often you're going to be picking in the top 10. The other part of me says you clearly seem to have made your bed somewhat with this quarterback now. Is it worth exploring a Kyle Pitts if, for some reason, Penei Sewell drops down that low and getting some protection? So I'll have an answer for you shortly once I figure it out in my own brain at this point.
All right, whatever.
I have a question I can ask you on the other side of this, though, Chiné.
Oh, no. What?
What are we supposed to do with Gonzaga now? Like, they got destroyed in a big way on a national stage last night. And, Chiné, I feel like Gonzaga is one of those programs that, because they're a mid-major, because it's the WCC, because where they come from and the size of school we're dealing with, they're always going to have to do way more for us to give them that sort of legitimacy and respect, because I think we know they're going to win a bunch of games. They're going to be a one seed very often when it comes to the tournament. But this ultimate prize, as was the case for Scott Drew on the other side with Baylor, has kind of eluded them in a way that makes it tough. So, Chiné, does Baylor blowing out Gonzaga in the way that they did kind of invalidate the rest of the season?
No, it doesn't. I think you mentioned it, coming from the West Coast, which, by the way, I think the last time a West Coast team won a championship was like the 90s with Arizona. And so, yeah, the tournament, let's see, yep, 90s Arizona. That was the last time a West Coast team won a championship. And the crazy thing is they've made about 22 tournaments, the most out of any team during the last 20 or so years. And so this has probably been the best program out of the West Coast, which is crazy to say as someone who celebrates the Pac-12. They have had the consistency. They've also been dominant in a number of games, especially against Power 5 teams, that made us all feel like they had enough experience to be able to deal with a Baylor. But boy, oh boy, I had Gonzaga yesterday. I am the first to admit, your girl was wrong. your girl was wrong, just because I felt like, okay, they had a small enough, like they had enough of a sample size for them to know exactly who they were. Their offense has been a juggernaut. They have had a lot of the players that we had talked about for the most portions of the season. But then, you know what? Oh, wait, hold on, Jing. Are you ready for this? You know what Baylor said? Hold my beer. Hold my beer. Exactly. I mean, that's the point of March Madness. It's not necessarily, are you the best team? It's, are you playing your best basketball? And can that basketball transcend any challenge in front of you? They had a huge challenge, the Baylor Bears, going up against Gonzaga undefeated. And guess what? They used their strength the best way possible. Bullied, muscled, out-rebounded, faster, hitting one-on-one isolation shots. Just literally, they were the tougher team in a year where you had to be tough to win a championship, and that's why Baylor won.
Chenang Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. You could save big when you bundle your auto, home, motorcycle, RV, or boat. Visit progressive.com. That's where I ultimately come down on this, Chenang, and I think that was certainly the miss on my end is, man, when all other things are equal, we knew Gonzaga came in this lights-out offense. We also knew Baylor shoots the hell out of the ball from three-point range, like they did in that game. When most things are equal, take the size advantage. It's what I always say when we talk about wide receivers in the NFL. If you're going to give me Antonio Brown or Julio Jones in these combos, I'm going to take the space alien that happens to wear pads. And in this case, I'm going to take the space aliens that happened to wear Baylor uniforms last night and can go ahead and push them around, coming off of a game where we probably should have seen this coming a little bit more. Shout out to friend of the program, Monica McNutt, who on Around the Horn basically said, you had one team that played an emotionally draining overtime game in the semifinal, and you had another that blew the doors off of Houston and basically got to coast through that, and maybe we all should have put a little more stock into that.
Yes, you're right. Junior, you, like, I think I could see you playing for Baylor.
Oh, I'd fit right in around there. I'd give you five good fouls and look like I'm decent coming off there after a couple of sets of push-ups and all that. Like, I joke, they looked kind of like they were getting ready to work out with the football team, and it showed because, man, once Scott Drew ditched that zone and went to this man-to-man with these kind of athletes, game over, flip-flip. Game over. But coming up
first
next.
First championship, by the way, Junior, in program history. That's a big deal.
Well, that is a big deal. And coming up next, that's what I want to get into with Jordan Cornette, because we talk about the difficulty for Gonzaga to overcome that kind of label and that assumption on their side. Scott Drew and Baylor were not far behind. When we look at Baylor and the turnaround under Scott Drew, when he took over this program to now, is this the best turnaround in college athletics overall? We'll get to that next after this word from 303.
Now, are you looking for professional level protection for your car's paint, but without the cost you'd pay a professional detailer? Well, guess what? New revolutionary 303 Graphene Nano Spray Coating provides just that. 12 months of protection with a simple mode of application. Guess what? You can do it by yourself in absolutely no time. It leaves your car's finish with insane levels of shine and depth. Plus, the water beading is just crazy. Your car will never look better. It also helps to keep your car looking like that way longer, too. The layer of protection helps to repel dust and fights off water spotting. It does this by making water shed quickly from the surface and lowering the surface temperature so that the water doesn't end up drying on the paint. It's also great to use on your car's glass, wheels, and trim, too. And now it's available at Advance Auto Parts and Pep Boys locations nationwide. Or you can learn more by visiting 303radio.com. Now, all of us, practically all of us, were wrong about Gonzaga, except our boy JC. How did he see the Baylor boys coming? And how good was Gonzaga really? We'll ask our friend right after this on Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and streaming live right now on ESPN Plus.
Chenang and Golic Jr., the podcast.
Chenang Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Big moves happening in the world of Major League Baseball. The Yankees going out there and doing what the Yankees do, acquiring marquee talent. We've also got an update. Not great, Bob, to start our career as San Diego Padres fans around here at Chenang Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio. Oh, my God. We'll get to all of that coming up soon, but we want to stick with happy thoughts right now. We want to stick with celebrating. Chenang was celebrating yesterday. Stanford wins the national championship on the women's side. Baylor joins them last night, but that's not what we're celebrating here. No, Jordan Cornette, our ESPN college basketball analyst, great work at the ACC Network. We are celebrating this moment here, Cliff, because go back to Jordan on our show before the national championship, and let's give him his flowers for this one.
who is going to, per your estimation, win the Final Four?
Oh, you know, for me, I definitely have to say on a men's side, I think it's Baylor. And because this whole time I believe that there are teams that could beat Gonzaga. And when I look at teams that could beat Gonzaga, I say, are they physical? Do they guard you? Can they score points? Are they strong with the basketball? Can they take care of it while generating turnovers?
Check, check, check.
Well,
Cornette brought to you by Wendy's, proud sponsor of the 2021 John R. Wooden Men's and Women's Player of the Year. Jordan, how's it feel to be so right?
You know, it feels really good. Like, I sent this tweet the other night when Stanford got it done, and people got to stop calling them the Cardinals. I mean, come on, it's the Cardinal. But I tweeted this.
I said,
Chinay stays winning. And I was like, you know what? But JC's got a little bit of winning in him, too, by making that pick with Baylor. I try to tell people, Gojo, I try to say, you know, this backcourt in the green jerseys is better than the backcourt from Gonzaga. And Gonzaga was celebrated all season long, deservedly so, to a point. But we got a little reckless, and we, meaning everybody but me, it seems like, by celebrating this Gonzaga team as one of the all-time great teams. And I felt like the brakes needed to be pumped because I didn't think they were the best team this season. I thought if Illinois got there, Illinois would have done what Baylor did. Baylor was ultimately the team that did it because they were more physical. They had been more battle-tested. And I do think there's something to be said for Gonzaga coming off of that ultimate high versus UCLA and not being built for the moment to turn around two sleeps later and get it done. The better team, and I don't know where the sound came from. I heard it coming in. But if Baylor and Gonzaga play 10 times, I don't know if they win 9. But they definitely win like 7 of them. They are the better team. They're constructed differently. They're more talented. They have more of the dog in them.
I think that was Bomani on the sound. And okay. Jordan Cornette definitely stays winning, at least when it comes to this pick, the most important pick. Our college basketball analyst joining us here on Chinay and Golic Jr. So congratulations, Jordan. I'm glad you got the best one. Now it really sort of begs the question, and thank you for shouting out the Cardinal, singular.
Right?
Also, great day for Trey Wingo, big brother, as well. Now, when we think about Gonzaga overall, though, a lot of people were saying, does this diminish the season that they've had? And we've said, no, anybody that makes it to the title obviously is a winner in a season like no other. But really, Jordan, as it pertains to basketball, was this Gonzaga team not as good as we all sort of expected?
Yeah, I feel like that would be an unfair I told you so for me if I took the bait on that one, Chinay, and said that, because I think it devalues what this team was. They were a really, really good team. They were a great basketball team. But I just got uncomfortable all tournament long and towards the end of the season and the way in which people started to put them up and prop them up. I didn't think it was fair to some of these great teams from before. You know, me and Jay Will had these conversations a ton. I mean, he played on a 2001 Duke team that I think would have throttled this Gonzaga team. This Gonzaga team was special. They should have their heads high. They were of championship ilk on this night. They just couldn't get it done because there was a more special team this season. But wow, was it fun to watch them offensively. I just don't think that they had it defensively in this Final Four. UCLA exposed them with matchups, and you saw it carry over into this Baylor game. I feel for Mark Few. Look, he's going to sleep well at night because he is one of the all-time greats coaching in this game, but it was within reach this year. And if not this year, then when for Gonzaga will they get over the hump and win a national championship? Gojo, I know you'll feel me on this one. I hear all these pundits come at Notre Dame every time they get to this stage and they can't deliver. Should we talk about Gonzaga like that? I say it almost in jest, but it shows you how unfair it is when people say, well, if they don't win the big one, they don't matter. I don't think that's fair. I think there's something to be said for building a program, a culture, and sustainable success. And Mark Few has that at Gonzaga, much like Brian Kelly has that at Notre Dame. So if you're cheering for those fan bases, you're having a lot of great years consecutively, and there's something to be said for that.
Jordan Cornette with us here on Chinay and Golic Jr., a proud Notre Dame alum like myself. And so he'll understand when I say, just because a private Catholic institution has a wonderful undefeated season and ends in ruin and a national championship stage, doesn't mean we need to invalidate everything that happened along the way. Life's about the journey in all
that's
this.
That's how you connect those dots.
Good job.
I agree, man. Listen. I mean, that's why Gojo's better at this than I am. I was kind of saying that. You tied a bow on it and punctuated it perfectly, my friend.
Listen, I can selfishly
that's
bring it back to
me. That's the first time he's actually been sane about it.
And listen, like you say, the first and probably only time with us here. But, Jordan, if we're doing all-time things on this, because that's what we were doing with Gonzaga, as you pointed out, all season long, is it fair to look on the other side at Scott Drew and the Baylor turnaround over the last 18 years, what he inherited after that unbelievable, awful scandal under Dave Bliss, and turn it into this national championship, to say this is the biggest turnaround in college athletics?
Yeah, I'm comfortable swimming in the water of that hyperbole, Gojo, because staying with that hyperbole, that scandal was one of the worst in sport. I mean, you're talking about a coach who's tasked with leading young men, developing and evolving them. And he was right there smack dab in the middle of a cover-up of a murder of one teammate taking the life of another. And that's absurd. I mean, that is just disgusting behavior. And for Dave Bliss, who I feel comfortable calling a clown because he has still never really taken ownership of his role in that, for Scott Drew to come in there wasn't a great opportunity. I mean, who would want that job? Scott Drew had to come in 2003 and hold open tryouts on campus to field a team. This was a program nearing extinction, deservedly so, coming off that scandal. And he basically took on a team half full of walk-ons. And the other guys were guys who stayed on because there wasn't a better place for them to go. This team won 3 games in conference the first year. The next year, they won 1 game in conference. It slowly started to build because they understood there was a heavy undertaking there for Scott Drew. And ultimately, he delivered. And he got that thing to a high level for the last decade. I mean, they have been a top team. You look at last season, and without COVID, maybe they win the national championship last year. So the job he's done, I'm comfortable saying it's the most impressive rebuild in the history of sport, not college basketball, not college sports, sports in its entirety. But it took, you know, both sides saying this is going to take a while. It took 18 years, but it really only took a couple years for that program to turn around and become one that was held in the upper echelon of college basketball. So it's remarkably impressive. Scott Drew is a great guy. And I hope he stays there and continues to achieve.
And as he pointed out in the postgame last night, were it not for the COVID pause during their season, we could have been talking about a matchup of undefeateds and potentially Baylor on the cusp of some of the same things we talked about with Gonzaga. Follow him on Twitter, at Jordan Cornette. Check him out all over the ACC network, as well as on Game Day on ESPN Radio every Sunday with his wife, our friend, Shay Cornette.
Season.
Jordan, I was going to say, you managed to make it through college basketball season. We know there were a lot of challenges. So we hope you enjoyed it, man. It was a hell of a finish. And we know we'll be talking to you here about plenty more here soon. It ain't just basketball around here.
Yeah. And we got that little one on the way here in the next few weeks. So we made it through one journey of a basketball season and crowned a champion. We look forward to that champion Cornette arriving for the next journey here in the Cornette household.
That sounds like a name.
Be very exciting.
Champion
Ooh,
Cornette.
Champion Cornette.
Oh, champ?
Should that be the name?
Oh,
we just
come
up with a name? I mean, that's too arrogant. We can't go champ.
I don't know,
why?
Man.
Why? No. DeColdis is out there and just committed and made it to LSU. Like,
true.
Champion.
There's a Champ Bailey. I mean, Champ Bailey's a Hall of Famer.
Yes.
I'm just saying, Jordan, we may have stumbled on something here. Run it by the missus. Let us know what you think.
See, Gojo definitely works a lot with my wife. He knows who I have to run it by before anything goes. It doesn't matter what I suggest. If it's not a co-signature or ultimately a stamp of approval, then it don't matter.
Facts.
True
Facts.
Words never spoken. I am learning every day more and more about being in a radio relationship here with Janae Agumake, and we learn from the best in the Cornettes. Jordan, we appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you
soon,
all right?
Thanks, Jordan.
Janae, Gojo, you know I love y'all. Thanks for having me on.
The man, the myth, the legend, at Jordan Cornette on Twitter, where you could find him. That baby coming soon. Think about on this show, we had a gender reveal with Chris Mitchell, one of our great producers on here, and now we are going to be welcoming in
another
one of the first
babies
of ESPN Radio, of one of the first families of ESPN Radio in the Cornettes. Very, very exciting
times. Oh, my gosh. Our family is expanding, Junior.
It's a beautiful thing around here. That's what everybody loves everybody around here. A little family atmosphere from 4 to 7 Eastern on your radios and on ESPN Plus. But coming up next, we joined a very different family in the world of Major League Baseball, and I think we already got to have like a family meeting. We'll get to why next. Janae and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
Janae and Golic Jr., the podcast.
With his work. Killing me softly with. Yo, I could not. This is it. With his song. Yo, Junior, do your thing, bro. I'm going to keep singing.
I'm just dying because Cliff gets in my ear. Janae Gold Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Mike Gold Jr., Janae Agumake. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Guests join us on the Goodyear Hotline. And all he says as Janae is singing is, speaking of killing me softly.
Really? Come on.
Cliff was trying to give me an air of that takeout here and indict myself in that spot. No. I'm throwing people under the bus around
here. I think that's my tone. I think that song is my tone.
I think that is. We have songs today that is right in our range. We are a singing show. This is Glee SPN. When everything is open back up to normal, we are going to tear some karaoke bar apart with stage presence.
Drowning my pain. Okay, you know what else is killing me softly? What happened to the Padres?
Yes. So we picked last week on the show, as we were getting ready for Major League Baseball opening day last Thursday, we decided, all right, we're going to join up with a baseball team. We want to get in, feel like we're a part of this season. Chenae was doing that with a whole bunch of side pieces during the NFL season this year. Yes. It's been a thing. We saw Mina Kimes, our ESPN NFL analyst, link up with the Brooklyn Nets during this season.
Yes.
May have started off ironically, but now it's a full-blown love affair. Chenae, we decided we were going to be Padres fans. San Diego's got a bunch of young guys out there. Manny Machado, big money. Fernando Tatis Jr., a young budding star, maybe the face of Major League Baseball. And it's gone. So, yesterday in the third inning of their game, Fernando Tatis Jr. suffered a partial shoulder dislocation on a hard swing and is now going to have an MRI ordered there. Chenae, this was something, shoulder problems. With this shoulder specifically, some soreness going back to spring training where he actually left a game with shoulder discomfort. And so apparently a little worse than they suspected. I'm a little confused as to why we were taking any kind of chances like that with the future of the sport, let alone the future of the franchise. But we are at a tough crossroads now. We're already early on in our tenure as Padres fans. We got to come out here and earn our stripes and stick through these tough times, right?
Do we though? Do we really?
Oh, God.
Like, obviously, we're rooting for Fernando Tatis Jr., but are we lying to people saying that we picked them because of anyone else? Like, we picked the Padres pretty much because he's one of the most fun, not just guys in baseball, but in sports world overall.
Because they serve fish tacos at the ballpark. Like, there are
okay,
other
fish
parts.
Tacos. I can get you some in LA. I can DoorDash you some fish tacos in Connecticut. Okay.
Wow.
Like, can we just make a decision whether or not we move forward with the Padres?
I want to stick with our Padres during this. I want to see them through this because I think this is going to be a bump in the road, a minor setback for a major comeback. Etchenay at Mike Golic Jr., should we really be talking about jumping ship midway through this, Cliff? Because this seems incredibly short-sighted.
Let me play tiebreaker here. I think we should move on to the Philadelphia Phillies.
That's the wrong
franchise. They got some dope jerseys. They got Bryce Harper.
They're pitching us already, Junior.
Just had a great comeback win yesterday on the Mets. Like, the Phillies are the ultimate franchise to choose, guys.
My God, Chenae Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. I don't know if we can go over to the Phillies, Chenae, but I know we good and damn sure will not be going over to the Astros. Could you just see this? In the sixth inning of their game at the Angels in Anaheim, an inflatable life-size garbage can full of garbage was thrown over the outfield wall, and then a real garbage can was thrown right after that as Jose Altuve was up at bat. And Chenae, if people were wondering if the Astros are still universally disliked around Major League Baseball, I feel like the first barely a week has shown us fans have been waiting for this opportunity after last year.
I don't know why people thought that we'd be mature enough as sports fans to just move on when we didn't have an opportunity to go to games, with the exception of what's happening with Texas Rangers right now.
Good Lord.
By the way, on ESPN Plus, when you saw that trash can being thrown out onto the field, did you notice it hit someone? If I was at a game and I got hit by an inflatable trash can, we are fighting. We are going to fight.
Inflatable trash can. I feel like that's a little more excusable.
Care.
If it was the real trash can, you're right. Hanzilla, stand up.
How,
like, it's got to be like that Facebook
miss?
Campbell video.
Did you see that? How do you miss? Like, you just, like, you couldn't go down a few more stairs and then throw it straight onto the field? Like,
but
what?
Also, this should tell you how hated the Astros are, because what other purpose would inflatable trash cans exist if not to rip the Houston Astros and their sign-stealing scandal?
Oh, and I love it. I love how people are, like, drinking and then, like, making sure, all right, we got a couple of drinks, and then put in the trash can. Now let's throw it.
Like I say, now it's time to do all this. I say we listen to Stacey Moon on Twitter, who tweets at us and says, I've been a Padres fan since I was six. Stay and enjoy the pain.
We can do it. We'll stay. I've decided here. I will stay with you all, one family, and we will stick with the Padres at least for the rest of this week.
I was going to say, until Chenae is offered a better team or this continues to get worse. But coming up next, it continued to get better for Baylor and Scott Drew. But is it the most impressive turnaround in all time? We'll answer that next here on Chenae and Golic Jr.